snap. The kick is in the air, and the kick this time is no, sir, Ree. No, sir, Ree. Final score, Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Pandemonium reigns.
You're listening to the RTI Podcast, powered by RockyTopInsider.com.
Welcome into the Rocky Top Insider Podcast. I am Ben McKee, joined by Matt Ray of VR2 on Sports Illustrated. It's a busy Monday. Just found out that Tennessee basketball has paused all team activities following multiple tests, positive COVID-19 tests within the basketball program. Rick Barnes is one of those members who tested positive for COVID-19. So obviously good thoughts and prayers are being sent in Rick Barnes' direction. The game on Wednesday against Charlotte has not been decided, but I have a hard time imagining that they would actually play, considering multiple people within the program have tested positive, but we'll see how that plays out. So plenty to talk about on the podcast. Tennessee basketball, COVID situation, and Tennessee loses to Auburn over the weekend. Once again, I am Ben McKee, your host, and I am joined by Matt Ray of VR2 on Sports Illustrated. Matt, how are you on this Monday morning?
Just like you, Ben. Busy man, but glad to be here.
Absolutely. I appreciate you you joining me. Once again, the big news that broke just as we pressed record after Jeremy Pruitt's press conference. We will primarily talk about football, but do want to touch on the latest development with the basketball team. Was scheduled to open against Charlotte on Wednesday at 8 p.m., then was going to be back in action on Friday against VCU at 6 p.m., but that is in question now, especially Wednesday's game against Charlotte. Tennessee put out a statement and said that they would make a decision by Tuesday or provide an update to those games by Tuesday. So we'll see how that plays out. But with multiple people testing positive and Rick Barnes being one of those, I have a hard time imagining that those games will be played. Your reaction when you saw the news?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The first thing I thought of was, you know, obviously Rick Barnes was the name that popped right away, but you hope that everybody's affected by this is going to be okay, and you're just shooting them a quick prayer. But then you come back to the thought of it's going to be really hard for Tennessee to play this week. Like you said, possibly Friday, but, you know, who knows? It just doesn't seem likely that Wednesday happens.
Yeah, and there's a possibility that an assistant coach could coach in place of Rick Barnes. Plenty of great options on Rick Barnes' coaching staff with Desmond Oliver, with Mike Schwartz, Kim English, all future head coaches. So I don't think that would be a big problem for a game or two. Not ideal. You still want the good Deacon on the sideline. But the question is, who else tested positive? How many others tested positive, and how much of that is going to spread within the team? And I imagine that is why they said that they would update the game, the season opener on Tuesday. Tennessee basketball just put out a tweet as I am speaking right now and said that a decision has not been made in regards to Wednesday's game against Charlotte, and that will be forthcoming. So I take it as good news that the game hasn't been canceled, obviously, because if it was in dire straits within the program, I imagine that the game would have already been postponed or canceled. So we'll continue to monitor that situation here at Rocky Top Insider, and Matt will continue to do so, I imagine, over at VR2 as well. So stay tuned in to both sites and both Twitter accounts as we will continue to update the status of Tennessee basketball and this week's openers. This is a football podcast. We're just blindsided by the basketball news that broke again, literally as I was pressing record or sending Matt the invite to this Zoom link. But Matt and I were going to link up today to talk about the current state of Tennessee football. Once again, not a fun current state of Tennessee football to talk about Tennessee coming off of a 30-17 loss to Auburn on Saturday night. And Matt, it's pretty remarkable that Tennessee loses by 13 points and only puts up 17 points when you consider how dominant Tennessee was at the line of scrimmage and how great of an evening Eric Gray had.
Yeah, you know, when you look back at Auburn over the past few years, you don't think about a team dominating them at the line of scrimmage. And Tennessee did that on Saturday night and in pretty much every facet of the game on the offensive side of the ball. And it just, you kept looking, I know you were probably looking at it too, Ben. I kept looking at it at the stat broadcast, and it was, you couldn't blink your eyes, and Eric Gray had another 8, 9, 10 yards, and all of a sudden he's 130, he's 150, and you're like, oh man, he's having another big one. And it never turned into anything. And you know, it was pretty surprising to see that happen. And you know, there's different plays that you can pinpoint throughout the game. The explosive play to Anthony Schwartz, the pick six for Jarrett Garantano. But you know, Tennessee just, it felt like they should have beat Auburn on Saturday night, but they just weren't able to put everything together to make it happen.
Yeah, I continue to think that Auburn football team is not a very good football team, quite honestly. I just don't. Tennessee dominated Auburn at the line of scrimmage. And look, Auburn made plays to win for sure, but you mentioned it, but you take away a couple of those plays, Matt, the pick six from Jarrett Garantano in the end zone, RPO, was trying to hit Josh Palmer in the end zone and stared him down and was late getting him the football. And as a result, Smoke Monday, Auburn safety, tricked JG. He commented after the game and said that he faked towards the middle. And then when JG went into his windup, he broke on the ball, picked it off, and returned it 100 yards. So you look at the pick six, you look at the two missed Brent Samaglia field goals, and you look at the Anthony Schwartz touchdown, the 54-yard touchdown in which Jalen McCullough and Trayvon Flowers had a miscommunication issue. And to me, that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's never a good sign when a ball's launched into the air and your safeties are standing there before it's even caught, kind of with their hands looking at each other. And then on top of that, it goes to, you know, Jeremy Pruitt referenced him as the fastest kid in the country, and he definitely has a case for it. So, you know, I felt like Tennessee did a pretty decent job of limiting Auburn, you know, for the most part in explosive plays. Auburn did have some chunk plays in the running game and in the throw game. But, you know, I felt like for what the Auburn offense is, Tennessee, you know, had more success than I kind of expected them to. But, you know, again, I'm like you, Ben. I don't think that Auburn football team is a very good football team. I don't see it. Bo Nix, you know, he plays well at home, and you know, he made the plays to win the ball game, and you know, that was a big part of it. But you know, he gets outside of the pocket at, you know, the first man that kind of throws their hand up, and he plays outside of the pocket, and he doesn't make the best decisions at all times, and just like the pick in the end zone for Bryce Thompson. But you know, Tennessee had a lot of momentum in that game again early on, 10-0, and it went south. It went south, and at 10-10, you could kind of feel it.
For sure. And the defense did a decent job at limiting big plays, explosive plays, but I still don't like where this Tennessee defense is at. To be quite honest, I think this defense is very soft and lacks a lot of ability, lacks toughness, lacks good football IQ. There are a couple of players on that defense that play well. Bryce Thompson is playing the best football on that team right now. Henry To'o, he started off the year great, but you just kind of forget that he's out there nowadays, and I think that's a product of not having many people around him to help him. The defensive line does not keep him clean and allow him to get in the backfield and make plays. He's always struggled because he's a young player in coverage, so that's something that he's continued continue to try and work on. But Crouch and Banks have given him little support there on the inside. But Tolu Tolu still obviously one of Tennessee's best defensive players, if not the best one. I would just take Bryce Thompson right now. Jeremy Pruitt talked on Monday about Warren Burrell playing well the last two games. Alante has been fairly okay when he's been in the game, but he's been dealing with that hamstring injury all season long. So outside of those three players, I mean, who can you really point to? DeAndre Johnson and Kevon Bennett, their stats look good, but I don't really think that they played that well this season. It hasn't been a constant pass rush off the edge. And against the run, I don't think they've done a good job of setting the edge either. So I'm not a fan of where this defense is at currently. I thought Auburn bailed them out a couple of times by having to kick field goals. The Bryce Thompson interception in the end zone that Bo Nix tried to force. But just little resistance from that Tennessee defense, especially the defensive line. And that's where you can really tell it's a line of scrimmage league, because Tennessee doesn't have anybody up there right now that's a difference maker. Little resistance against the run, very small amount of plays in the backfield, if any, this entire season. There's just not a push against the run or a push in the pocket to pressure the quarterback or really fill those run gaps and put opposing offenses behind the sticks. And then you look at the linebackers and no difference maker outside of Henry Tolu right now. And the secondary has gotten worse from last season, despite having the same players, not named Nigel Warrior. It's just a cluster right now. So you pair that with the Jarrett Garantano pick six, and it's not a great combination. Obviously, the one bright spot is Eric Gray in that rushing attack. Eric Gray getting going on the ground. His best performance of his Tennessee career, in my opinion, Matt. I know he had the big game against Vanderbilt last year when he broke off 246 rushing yards because of two big long rushing plays. But that was against Vanderbilt's defense, and they pretty much gave him those big long rushing touchdowns. But against Auburn, he earned every single yard.
Yeah, I'll start with Gray. Absolutely, by far his best overall body of work on Saturday night. Just he looked like a complete back. He did it all for Tennessee. He was good at every level of the field, I felt like. And, you know, like you said, he hit those explosive chunk plays against Vanderbilt, and don't take that away from him. But the overall game didn't stack up to what he did against Auburn, and the competition didn't stack up like Auburn has compared to Vanderbilt. So I thought he played really, really well on Saturday night. And then, you know, on the defense, you hit the nail on the head there. There's not much more I could say. I was interested to see Warren Burrell get the star and, you know, lined up against Seth Williams, physical, fast, explosive receiver. And Warren Burrell, he loves to press and run. He loves to jaw a little bit, and he's always succeeded in those type of scenarios. And I thought on Saturday night, he had a pretty good showing, given the limited reps that he had in fall camp, the injury that he dealt with to his hand, and then, you know, he hasn't had a lot of game action this year. So that's a pretty tough out to come out and go head to head with a guy like that. So I thought Warren Burrell was a bright spot for Tennessee. And, you know, Bryce Thompson, I think, is playing by far, hands down, the best ball on the defensive side of the ball for Tennessee. I love what they're doing with him at safety. I would have liked to have seen him use that a little bit more on Saturday night. He has such great instincts and ball skills that – when you've got a guy like Bo Nix that's, you know, moving the pocket and trying to throw off platform, and I feel like you give yourself more opportunities to create on the back end with Thompson at cornerback. So I really like that, or at safety than at cornerback. I really like that look there, letting him patrol the middle of the field, and it resulted in a pick in the end zone. So, you know, Tennessee's just got so much to clean up. And Jeremy Pruitt said today that, you know, he's coached teams where they have elite explosive pass rushers, and he's coached teams where it's kind of obsolete. But, you know, just from an overall push standpoint up front, I don't know that he's ever coached a team that lacks a push like this one does on the defensive front.
No, he is not. And it's pretty remarkable to look back and think about how much Daryl Taylor covered up the rest of the defensive line and pass rushes deficiencies, because Daryl Taylor's really been the only pass rusher the last 2 years. You look at last season and this season, and it's the same defensive line, and they've gotten worse. So I think Daryl Taylor really covered up a lot last offseason, and there are some young, exciting playmakers up front. For Tennessee, or I shouldn't label them playmakers. There are some young, exciting prospects up front defensively right now. You look at Amari Thomas, you look at Tyler Barron, you look at Morvin Joseph, potentially Bryson Eason, Henry Tolotolo, sophomore, Kovaris Crouch, sophomore, Jeremy Banks, sophomore, Dominic Bailey, he's an athletic guy that could potentially make some plays. Greg Emerson, he's just a sophomore. Elijah Simmons, redshirt freshman. There's a solid young nucleus. The problem is they haven't developed as much as they should have by this point. They shouldn't be all SEC players or some of the best players in the league, but they should be producing more than what they are. And maybe that's because of COVID. I know people don't want to hear that. I do think that's a factor, but there haven't been a ton of signs of progress, which is what makes it so frustrating. And outside of the quarterback position, Matt, kind of leads me into my next question. We'll talk about the quarterback position in just a moment. I don't think this team is fixable this season. I think if this coaching staff, if Jeremy Pruitt is going to get his tenure turned around, it's going to be because he sits down after the last game of the season, when the 2020 season officially ends. He sits down and he makes a to-do list, and I mean, he executes it flawlessly. That's the only way that this gets turned around, in my opinion. I don't think that there's anything in season at this point as it relates to the defensive side of the ball that can change things. You got to go out and you have to get not a graduate transfer. I need to quit saying graduate transfer, because now with the one-time transfer rule that looks like it's going to come into place in January, just a transfer in general that can come in and provide a pass rush. And honestly, you probably need two or three, quite frankly. But I don't know about you, Matt, but I don't think that anything can change the defense at this point in the season. I think it just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, no. In the next 3 weeks, nobody's going to suddenly, turn up and change this defense from a coaching standpoint, from a player standpoint. It's not going to happen. I agree with Ben. It is what it is, and it is pretty remarkable to think about what Daryl Taylor covered up. And I agree. I think for Jeremy Pruitt, not just turning the defense around, turning several things around, it's all going to come to the offseason. By far the biggest offseason of his head coaching career, in my opinion. You have to win, some recruiting battles, some guys that, you're trying to hang on to and keep in this class that can come in and provide more competition and, a hope that you get a full spring and fall camp with those guys next year and, that COVID doesn't rock you to the core again. I know, and personally myself, I'm tired of hearing about COVID a lot. It's the world we live in, and every day people push it to the side or whatnot. I do think Jeremy Pruitt's team was very impacted by COVID. I think out of the SEC schools and the schools across the country that got hit, they probably got hit at the absolute worst time. In the season, things get pushed around, your game gets postponed, but they got hit for 2 weeks of fall camp where everybody else is working. Yeah, that's a big deal. But at this point in the season, we're past that. You can't keep going back to that time and time again. I'm like you. I think it's going to be a lot of things that are going to go on that to-do list, and he has to execute it flawlessly, like you said.
When you look at the quarterback position, I think that is one thing that could spark a change, especially this particular game against Vanderbilt. And honestly, when you look at the Florida game as well, which is next Saturday, if COVID doesn't get in the way of that, which you don't really feel comfortable about COVID not getting in the way of anything with the recent spike over the last 2 or 3 weeks. But Florida's defense is really bad. Vanderbilt true freshman quarterback Ken Seals put up 300 yards of passing on Florida this past weekend. So I do think that a freshman quarterback, true freshman quarterback, everybody's favorite true freshman quarterback, Harrison Bailey, could find success because that Florida defense is not good. And side note, that's what is going to prevent Florida from winning a national championship and, in my opinion, an SEC championship. But Harrison Bailey, I think, can find success against Vanderbilt this weekend. I think he can find success against Florida because that defense is so bad. I don't know about A&M because A&M is a different beast, and at the end of the day, Harrison Bailey is still a true freshman that has been severely impacted by COVID in terms of reps and things of that nature. But would you make a change at quarterback for this Vanderbilt game? And I know everybody thinks it's just an automatic yes, and I don't necessarily disagree with that sentiment, but I do think it is more of a conversation, Matt, than most people want to acknowledge, just because outside of the catastrophic mistakes from Jarrett Garantano, and there's no making up for that whatsoever, not trying to say that, but JG does do good things well within the offense that maybe go unnoticed. And Jeremy Pruitt talked about this during his Monday press conference about making sure Tennessee is in the right run fits and in the right plays and things of that nature. So I do think it is a legitimate conversation to have and not as simple as JG threw another pick six, start Harrison Bailey. I don't think it's that simple because there are things that JG is doing well. And outside of the pick six, I mean, he did play fairly decent against Auburn. The problem is Jarrett's just not a difference maker, not a playmaker. But would you make a change at quarterback going into this Vanderbilt game on Saturday if you were in charge of Tennessee football?
You know, you really hit the nail on the head with your last sentence there. He's just not a difference maker as far as it goes for Tennessee. And you know, to a point coming into this season, I don't think anybody thought he had to be. You know, I thought people thought that Tennessee's defense was going to be a little bit more solidified. You were going to see a little bit more from the guys on the back end in the secondary. The offensive line was going to be what the offensive line was. And he was going to be able to – he wasn't going to have to make a difference. He just wasn't going to have to lose games for Tennessee. Similar to kind of what we saw back at Alabama in 2008, 2009, you know, that type of thing. Not to say that Tennessee was going to be competing for a national championship this year, but I think along those same lines. Now, the problem for me for Jarrett Garantano this year is his mistakes have came at the absolute worst times. Or, you know, you can get away with a pick six in the first quarter against Kentucky or second quarter against Kentucky, but then you throw another one to follow it up. So I feel like his mistakes have compounded, and that's one of the reasons he receives the criticism he doesn't. I don't feel that all the criticism that Jarrett receives is anywhere close to necessary. He's a kid. He's gave, you know, his all for this university. He clearly loves this university. You know, but all that aside, I think for me this week, I would certainly go to Harrison Bailey. I think it's another good opportunity. We know that Tennessee got him plenty of reps in practice and live action reps and has been trying to bring him along for, you know, a month now or longer. And he got plenty of reps when they were starting to prepare for Texas A&M and Jarrett was out. He continued to, you know, share a load last week. You have another opportunity to work him this week and, you know, hopefully not have to put too much on his shoulders to beat Vanderbilt on Saturday. So yeah, I think it's a good opportunity. But at the same time, if I'm the head coach and I'm sitting here and I'm facing a lot of criticism and, you know, agree with or disagree with me if I'm wrong here, Ben, but it felt to me like for one of the first times on Saturday night, Jeremy Pruitt was agitated and he felt a little bit of pressure. Do you agree with that or no?
Completely agree. Completely agree. I thought the question that he particularly got aggravated with was fair, and that question was, what would you say to the fans that feel or question where this program is headed. I thought that was a fair question. B, in my opinion, Pruitt should have appreciated that question because it was a softball for him to talk about his program in a positive manner and kind of reinforce what he is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That I agree with you on that. And to me, I was thinking about it on the ride home from Auburn. You know, really, you look back to Jeremy Pruitt back at Hoover 15 years ago. He hasn't ever felt pressure in his coaching career since then. You know, he's been a part of programs that have won and been successful and you know, multiple national championships and had top rated defenses. So, you know, it was a different element for him. So with that said, yes, I would start Harrison Bailey, but if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, I'm feeling pressure for the first time, you know, in 15, 16 years, whatever, however long it's been. And I truly believe what I've been telling everybody that Jerry Garantano gives my team the best chance to win. And I know I can't afford to go on the road and lose to Vanderbilt. I'm probably not going to. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's a conversation that's very interesting.
I would start Harrison Bailey. I really would. I can recognize that Jarrett does things well.
Absolutely.
More things well than most people care to admit. But those only last so long when you continue to commit such catastrophic turnovers. I truly, 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 truly believe that Tennessee is, what would that be, 4-3 right now. I think that's the correct math. 4-3 right now if he does not throw the two pick sixes against Kentucky and does not throw the pick six against Auburn, because Tennessee dominated Kentucky that first half, or really the first quarter and a half. They dominated Kentucky defensively, shut their offense down for three quarters. But then Eric Gray and the offensive line was dominating Kentucky in that first half as well. So I truly believe Tennessee beats Kentucky without those two pick sixes. And JT Stroud also contributed to that. He threw an interception that led to a field goal. But without those catastrophic mistakes, Tennessee wins that football game. I can't definitively say that Tennessee would have beaten Auburn like I feel like I can against Kentucky had he not made the pick six. But it was late in the third quarter. Auburn was up 13-10. It looked like Tennessee was about to take a 17-13 lead, and who knows what happens in the fourth quarter. So, yes, he may do other things well, but what good does that do if he continues to commit catastrophic mistakes? And look, I do think that it's just, you know, two or three mistakes a game, and they haven't all been catastrophic. He didn't have any catastrophic mistakes against Arkansas. He didn't really have any mistakes in general against Arkansas. The mistake was not getting down or not getting out of bounds on that scramble, and he suffered a concussion because of it. So I recognize that he does everything well, but who cares if he continues to make catastrophic mistakes that cost his team the football game? And you don't know what you're going to get from Harrison Bailey in a full 60-minute game when the defense isn't just simply giving him all the underneath stuff. But at this point, I'm willing to try it. I think Harrison Bailey has shown me enough composure in four or five offensive series this season to give him a shot. And it's simply for the sake of if you're going to start a true freshman quarterback, this Vanderbilt team is the team to do it. Yes, Vanderbilt is playing better right now than they were at the beginning of the year. They play inspired football for an 0-17. Derek Mason always has his team ready to play. This weekend will be Vanderbilt Super Bowl. They would kill to go 1-9 with their only win being against Tennessee. But they're still a really bad football team, an atrocious football team, and there's really no reason Tennessee should lose this football game regardless. So I think this is a perfect opportunity to roll out Harrison Bailey, try something new for the sake of trying something new, because the catastrophic mistakes continue to happen, and they can't happen in this football game if Jeremy Pruitt wants to hold on to his job. I mean, it's as simple as that to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, at this point in Jared Garantano's tenure, and listen, I understand. My train of thought is, I absolutely start Harrison Bailey. I've felt that way for a little while now, and I've made that pretty obvious. I mean, there's been no secret about my feelings with it. I felt like when your season goals kind of went out the window, I still understood, but I kind of felt like when your season goals went out the window in a season like this, if Harrison Bailey is the future and you're running the game plan that you were running, and Jim Chaney, I don't think gets enough credit for Saturday night, caught a really good game plan, just a little side note blurb there. But if you're going to do what you did there against Arkansas and Alabama, where you were a shell of your offense and your season goals are out the window, I felt like then, you know, give your freshman quarterback a chance. What can't he do that Jarrett is doing? And like you said, Jarrett didn't beat Tennessee against Arkansas. He didn't really make a mistake. But at this point, I would 100% roll with Harrison Bailey, given who Vanderbilt is. But, you know, I don't know. I just can't think. I don't know what Jeremy Pruitt's going to do, but I just feel like after the way he kind of reacted on Saturday night, that I wouldn't be surprised if he is feeling a little bit of pressure and he truly feels what he's been saying, that Jared Garantano doesn't at least get the nod.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. And I continue to say, I've said it for weeks now, I know you've heard me say this, Matt, I don't blame Jeremy Pruitt for a single quarterback decision that he has made in season. I agree with the quarterback decisions he has made all seven games to this point in the season. Where he gets blame is the offseason. He did not go out and address the quarterback position. I do believe that he has played the best option to this point, and that option has been Jared Garantano. But now he may no longer be the best option now that Harrison Bailey has had 2 months now of practice and repetitions under his belt as he's been working behind JG in practice. They had the two open weeks, one because of a natural bye week, one because of a forced one because A&M had COVID issues and that game got postponed. But Harrison Bailey has had plenty of repetitions to where you should be able to start him against Vanderbilt. Not Alabama, not Florida, not Georgia, not A&M, but against Vanderbilt, the worst team in the SEC by far, and a team that probably doesn't deserve to be a Power 5 team right now. So I think now is the perfect opportunity to do so. But will he? That's my question to you, Matt. I know it's an unfair question, but do you think that – I know it's Monday. A lot's going to happen between now and Friday. But do you feel like Pruitt will make a change, or do you think he'll stick to what he's done all year?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. And like I said, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do feel confident in saying that Jeremy Pruitt put a lot of his chips into the Harrison Bailey recruitment. He was the guy there. That was his stabilizing quarterback. Now, is Tennessee, you know, are they very invested in Caden Salter? Absolutely. You know, we know how much they love him, but for Jeremy Pruitt at this point, I think you have to start Harrison Bailey, because when you look back and you look at Jared Garantano's career, it's been filled with some ups and a lot of downs, but he's been pulled for Keller Christ, JT Trout, Brian Maurer, Harrison Bailey, and maybe even Will McBride. I may be wrong on that last one.
I think the last one was, I think JG got hurt. Yeah, he got hurt in that Missouri game that Will McBride started.
You're right.
Against Missouri.
Yeah. So, you know, he's been pulled more times in his career for a different quarterback each time than most quarterbacks get pulled. And a lot of the times it's been for a catastrophic mistake or not succeeding. So at some point, you have to say, hey, we've got to go a different direction. And, you know, if there's a game to show that Jarrett is the best option, it's Vanderbilt. You know, you should be – you don't want to go get in a dogfight with them. But if you really feel like he's the best option, start somebody else and show, like, hey, this guy's – he's not going to work for us, and you still have time to to probably not get blown out of that game and get Jarrett back in there and do whatever you need. But there's not a better time than Vanderbilt. So I think Jeremy Pruitt is going to roll with Harrison Bailey this week. If I was putting money on it right now, I would go Harrison Bailey. But I'm so hesitant about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I kind of go back and forth. I kind of lean to Jarrett Garantano starting. I think that's what he's going to do because Jeremy Pruitt's job is on the line this Saturday.
That's the thing I come back to.
I know it's year three. I know it's a COVID year. There's been some rumblings about the boosters maybe not willing to pay a buyout right now. But let's see how they feel if Tennessee loses to this Vanderbilt team. I know Tennessee has lost to Vanderbilt over the last couple of seasons. I believe it's three out of the last five now. Those other three were actually good Vanderbilt football teams by Vanderbilt football standard. This Vanderbilt team is bad by Vanderbilt football standard. They were before the season started, and now after the season has started, they've had numerous opt-outs, numerous transfers, numerous players lost to injury for the season. You can't lose to this football team. So we'll see how the boosters feel if Pruitt loses this football game. And because it's such a dire game, I think he's going to lean on JG just because of all those little details that he talks about with Jarrett, that Jarrett does well and that he's worried about a true freshman messing up. That's kind of why I think he'll end up starting Jarrett Garantano, although I would start Harrison Bailey. And obviously Harrison would have a leash. And if he gets in there and he throws an interception or two, then I would put Jarrett into the game. Because you know what, Matt? What did we see last year when JG did not start and had to come off the bench? He actually played well.
Yeah, he was sixth man of the year. I mean, when he came off the bench, he was as good as any sixth man that came in and got hot for the most part on a basketball team. I mean, yeah, absolutely. The dynamics of this game are so interesting because it's the perfect opportunity to go to the freshman, like you said. But at the same time, if Jeremy Pruitt wins this game, he can lose the next two and he's got the offseason to correct things. But if he loses this game, I think at that point, all bets are off. So,
yeah, I'm with you.
It's a big, and maybe he's not viewing it as big as a decision as we're talking about it. Maybe it's pretty cut and dry, but for me, it's a big decision. Yeah.
He needs to.
It's a big decision.
It is one that could prove a fatal to his Tennessee tenure if he is not careful, or one that could prove to save his tenure. We'll see how it plays out. Real quick before we get you out of here, I want to ask you two recruiting questions. Tennessee actually did receive some good news on Saturday when JUCO running back Tyon Evans committed back to Tennessee. He originally committed back in April, decommitted in September, been filling out the recruiting process the last 2 months, but he is back in the boat, a great addition to a Tennessee running back room that has talent but needs more of a physical presence, especially against or especially in pass protection. And Tyon Evans is exactly that. This is a big boost for Tennessee, in my opinion. What are your thoughts on Tyon Evans being back in the boat?
Yeah, this is a guy that Tennessee loves. And like you said, just a back that can do a little bit of everything. You worry about junior college kids nowadays and all that. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's got 3 years to play three because the junior college season was obsolete this year. So you've got plenty of time. This is a kid that, you know, is developed a little bit more physically and can come in and help you. I think Tennessee fans should be really excited about Tyon Evans.
I'm with you. He reminds me, when I watch his film, Matt, of James Robinson, the running back from Mississippi State a couple of years ago when Dak Prescott was in Starkville and they had that little bowling ball. That was his nickname, the bowling ball. That's who he reminds me of for very similar reasons. So that will be a great addition for Tennessee. And he told me on Saturday, not that this was groundbreaking news, he has talked about signing early throughout the entire recruiting process, but wanted to double check with him to see if that was still the plan, since it was the second time he was committing, and he did say that he intended to sign during the early signing period. So he'll be in the boat here in less than a month, which is great news for Tennessee. Another player that they are hoping to have in the boat here soon is Nylon Green, the four-star corner from the state of Georgia. He had some interesting tweets on Sunday that alluded to him potentially making a decision soon. Where do you think Tennessee stands with Nylon Green, and where do you think his timeline currently sits?
You know, at the first of the month for Nylon, it was the middle of the month, and now he's about ready to put his ticket in, as he said on Twitter. I think he's been about ready to put it in since the daggum summer. But it's been to almost a different program every time. Tennessee has battled to a really good spot, but, you know, Nylon has pretty much gone radio silent. The people around him think that Tennessee remain in a good spot, but, you know, Clemson has continued to prioritize him, and at one point they were the favorite. Georgia's never gone away, and you continue to hear some positive returns from their side. They like their connections, and I think Tennessee likes their connections. So I think there's still work to be done for every program between now and whenever he commits and then signing day. I think even if you get his commitment this close to signing day, I don't think it's over with. So for whoever gets him, there's still a long ways to go. But I think Tennessee has – I think Tennessee's done the most in this recruitment. They've been almost completely out of it, and he's had no interest, and they've just stayed the course, and credit Derek Ansley for a lot of that. But he really likes that bond with Derek Ansley, and they've made a hard pitch, and a lot of people don't think that he can get out of the state of Georgia, but Clemson and Tennessee definitely have different ideas on that. And they've been really close at times. So it'll be interesting to see if he lets any, you know, surprise visit news slip out where he may take another visit on his own. But he's been to Knoxville a couple of times. He likes what he could do in Tennessee's secondary. He likes the guys that are in the secondary that he could be playing with, kind of the same situation at Georgia. So I'm not sure what his timeline is. He's been ready to shoot his commitment video that he'll release on social media for almost a month now, but you know, how have things changed and who's continued to prioritize him? I know he wanted to start getting it laid out because he felt like he could make a decision, you know, with his family, but you know, still a long ways to go there
for sure. And a recruit that Tennessee needs to find a way to get in the boat, he would go a long way towards helping Demaryius McGee and Marley and so many of those recruits that Tennessee is bringing in. I think they're up to six DB commits at the moment, guys they envision playing in the secondary. I think he would be the seventh. So he would go a long ways towards helping fix this Tennessee secondary that I talked about, the young pieces in the defensive front earlier. Man, I think there's some intriguing pieces in the secondary as well. Bryce Thompson, I think he's off to the NFL personally after this season, but you'll have Alante Taylor back. You'll have Warren Burrell, who has been talked about recently as playing good football from Jeremy Pruitt himself. McCullough will be a sophomore again, and I still think the future is bright for him. He's been dealing with an injury all season. Flowers will be back. You have Key Lawrence, Danico Slaughter, a ton of young guys that you can add to this signing class, and all of a sudden it's looking a little bit better. So we'll see how that plays out. But Matt, I appreciate you hopping on the podcast, talking about Tennessee basketball's unfortunate COVID situation. Again, Rick Barnes has tested positive. He is one of multiple within the program. Rick Barnes is the only one that we know for sure has tested positive, but there are others. Wednesday's game against Charlotte, the opener, has not been canceled or postponed just yet. There will be an update on that on Wednesday. And as we are wrapping up, Matt, the Lady Vols season opener has been canceled. The Lady Vols were scheduled to open against Florida A&M on Friday at 2:00. That game has been canceled because apparently Florida A&M, their opponent, is canceling its season. So Tennessee basketball, Lady Vols basketball, It was supposed to be a big week for both programs, but both are not looking good. So we'll continue to update that for you here at Rocky Top Insider. But Matt, I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Ben. Enjoyed it.
For Matt Ray of VR2 on Sports Illustrated, be sure to follow Matt on Twitter. Does a great job of covering Tennessee. But for Matt Ray, I'm Ben McKee. Enjoy your Thanksgiving week, and please be kind to one another. We'll talk to y'all later.